Where in hell can you go? Far from the things that you know. Far from the sprawl of concrete that keeps crawling its way. Keep your heart off your sleeve.
Guppy Productions presents Series 2 of From Colchester to Sulawesi, written for Combe Radio by Phil Boast and Paula Larcher. Episode 5 of 6, The Missing Documents.
The Polder, or Monado Police Headquarters, is a large, stark, imposing building, the inside of which it's best not to see unless your need is great. The long, echoing corridors, which, in common with all of the government offices we have visited, would benefit from an investment in some paint, are piled high with boxes of forms which you don't want to see either, but there they are, awaiting their next unwary recipient. The police work rather differently here than in our former home. In the first place, it's a Monday to Friday operation. Nothing is done at weekends, and Friday is sports day, so not much goes on then either. And on Monday morning, they have the weekly flag-raising ceremony. Thus, may we rest content in the knowledge that our police force are relaxed and fit as they go about their work, from about Monday lunchtime to sometime on Thursday afternoon. During this time, they may occasionally be seen out and about, whistling loudly at traffic cues for no immediately apparent reason. But beyond that, anything which is needed of a more investigative nature must be paid for. Generally speaking, minor offences such as theft are dealt with at village level, either by fisticuffs between individuals or families, or by intervention of the head of village, or if that doesn't work, by the Lura, who is a head of a group of local villages. The police are summoned only as a last resort, and on the whole are not welcome in the villages. In any case, upon arrival at the Polder, we are guided through the warren of rooms and passageways by Tom to a small, shabby back room, where, aside from Aris, Tom and ourselves, we are surprised to be introduced to the head of district police and three other high-ranking officers, one of whom is called Amelia. Amelia speaks perfect English, and we regale her in detail with the events of the previous day, which Tom will have already outlined when setting up the interview. So, Amelia interprets, and Aris bears witness to all that went on at Onnie's house. The incident with the petrol and the threat of violence against Paula are all taken very seriously. But what is also of particular interest to the officers is the amount of money that we have left for and sent to Onnie over the last 18 months or so. To us, this is quite unimportant and, in any case, off the point. We have a lodge to show for it, the costs have in the end not really exceeded our expectations, and we have no quarrel with Onnie in this regard. Nevertheless, I am dispatched to collect evidence of money transfers and accounts relating to the building works, administration, and so on, which seems to me to be a bit of a waste of time. But if it adds fuel to the fire of our case, then so be it. So, Aris and I leave, and on the way, on this day of all days, the jeep breaks down, and Aris collars the next unsuspecting and anonymous passing motorcyclist and instructs him to take me the rest of the way to the lodge. Meanwhile, Aris fixes the jeep, and some time later we return to the police HQ with the required paperwork, and this looks set to be a long day.
In Phil's absence, and why the hell has he gone for so long, I am questioned at great length about our relationship with Onnie. I show them the text message which Onnie sent, and pending Phil's return with the accounts, it is agreed by all that the land and so on is Onnie's in name only, and only for legal reasons, and that he must return all documents to us. I play up the fact that Onnie threatened to attack me and how unhappy I now feel about the idea of seeing him again and our concerns as to what he might now do in his current state of mind. Phil finally returns and the next hour or so is spent going over the figures and money transfers in detail. And much ado is made of this. At the end, it is agreed that Onnie must be summoned to a meeting with all present, and that in the meantime, Tom and another officer will be stationed at the lodge 24 hours a day to provide protection for us. And so ends the first interview, and we step out into the free Monado air, somewhat more than 7 arduous hours after first entering the building. The high-ranking police presence at the interview, and all that has transpired, are indications that everyone is taking the matter very seriously indeed, and in any case more seriously than we had expected, and in truth, in some respects, probably more seriously than our Phil and I. We don't really think that Onnie would dare come to the lodge again with his petrol can, and I may have overdone the frightened female a bit, but there it is. And we will have a couple of police minders, which we will, of course, have to pay for. In the meantime, Newman has told Benjamin, the headman, all about the matter. And Newman has decided that he will also sleep at the lodge, just to give us some extra protection. And the whole village is now on high alert. So we feel fairly safe as we go about our more normal lives and wait to be summoned again. The only difference for now being that wherever we go, we have a policeman with us.
Now walking back down this mountain, the strength of a turning tide, oh, the wind so soft at my skin, yeah, the sun so hot upon my side, all looking out at this happiness, I search for between the sheets, oh, feeling blind, to realize all I was searching for was me. Oh, 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 all I was searching for was me.
A few days later, after the first interview, we are summoned again to the polder, and this time Onnie is present. He is questioned at length, and he lies. He denies threatening Paula or pouring petrol on the jeep, and says that we have paid him no money for the work that he has done for us in overseeing the building of the lodge, sorting out our work permits and so on. When questioned as to how he has lived for the past months and how he has a new house, however, he is unable to provide any answers. We should, in retrospect, have made payments to Onnie more official and structured, but we are new to all of this and never expected things to come to such a pass. The police by now have photocopies of all financial transactions, bank statements and so on, and we have Aris to bear witness to the events of the fateful day, so Onnie is making things worse for himself. To admit his actions and to apologise would have been the sensible thing to do, and that may have been an end to the matter in terms of his fairly minor criminal activities. But now he has also lied to the police, which in itself is a serious offence, and for that alone he could be imprisoned. The aspect of all this which is still of most concern to us, however, is the return of our documents, and Onni is given 1 week to present himself and the documents to the polder, which he agrees to do, since he doesn't now have much choice in the matter. He is told that he must not go to the lodge or attempt to make contact with us, and there, finally, the second interview is ended. Onni has been in a high state of agitation and sometimes angry emotion throughout, and has made no eye contact with us, whereas we have played the calm, aggrieved party, and this has worked in our favour. We are, in any case, now well past any amicable end to all of this, but we have a sense that things are moving our way, and have made contacts in high places within the Milardo Police Department, which is no bad thing for our future life that we may have here. Amelia in particular has quickly become a friend and has taken our side. Our relationship with Onni, on the other hand, is now officially broken. And as we leave the room, our expectation, and indeed now our hope, is that we will not see him again.
During the days that we wait for news of our documents, more ordinary things are happening. I mean, just about everything that happens here is still new to us, and we've been living here for less than a month by now, although it's starting to feel like longer. But I suppose in terms of ordinariness, everything is relative. We have guests to look after, for one thing, and have to go about the place as if we don't have a care in the world and know exactly what's going on at all times. We are also contacted by Albert, who was our driver during our early dealings with Onni, who says that he will bear testament against Onni for things that went on during our long absences. We thank him and say that we will let him know if we need him, but actually we would prefer not to make things more complicated and depressing than they already are. Another quite ordinary thing that happens is that we employ Raymond, brother to Newman and Tom, as our kaboon, or gardener. Raymond can also drive, which gives us a second driver if Aris isn't around. So we have our fourth permanent staff member. And now, assuming that we get through all of this, we will have all aspects of the upkeep and maintenance of the lodge covered. And regarding Onni and our missing documents, all we can do for now is wait and hope for the best.
Motherland, cradle me. Close my eyes, lullaby me to sleep. Keep me safe, lie with me. Stay beside me, don't go. Don't you go.
Find out what happens when we return to the adventures of Phil and Paula in Sulawesi in next week's episode of Bill's Big Bag of Onions, here on Cone Radio.